and welcome to the Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kausji. Niaga Spotlight goes through the week in business and future affairs. Market Watch, industries, analysis and insights, we've got you covered right here on Niaga Spotlight. Well, today we begin with future affairs and looking at data leaks and the digital finance industry. Wide adoption of digital finance could increase the GDP of emerging economies like Malaysia by 6% by 2025. However, digital banks, despite being seen as the next great frontier that will unlock new innovations for the fintech sector, this happens to be an issue because the future of digital banking depends vastly on data protection and security, which is a daily concern due to repeated data leaks in Malaysia. Now, most recently, NordVPN detected more than 22,000 stolen Malaysian payment cards among 6 million stolen cards on the dark web. Their analysis shows cards being sold for an average of $8, around 36 ringgit each. Now, since card data includes personal information like addresses, phone numbers, this theft likely occurred via more sophisticated methods such as phishing and malware. Joining me in the studios now to discuss Malaysia's data leaks and the digital finance industry is Gilbert Chu, Chief Operating Officer with LGMS Berhad. Gilbert, thanks so much for making time to join us in the studios. How are you today?
Thank you very much. Good morning. Good morning to Malaysia.
All right. Wonderful. So let's get started off by me asking you. Now, choosing trustworthy financial apps is actually one of the best ways to secure online banking. How can Malaysian mobile banking apps, for example, overcome some of the historic issues that we've seen of data breaches with perhaps improved security policies from your perspective?
Right. I think the keyword is the history, the past. It's very important that we learn from the history, that we learn from the past. So what usually happens here is that in the industry, there are always two ways to do things, right?
Sure.
So if we got attacked by an incident, we can choose to sweep under the carpet, quickly go back to the operation, go back to the business. But by learning from the history, by learning the how does it happen?
Mm-hmm.
If bad, who did it? And what can be done from there? By knowing the root cause analysis, knowing what exactly happened that triggered the particular incident, which is what we're saying here, knowing the past, learning from the past. So by knowing all these root causes, knowing the reasons why it happened, it can come with a series of effective security action plans.
Mm, so basically the SOP in case anything happens, right?
SOP in case anything happened, mm-hmm. or policies to prevent certain things to happen, bring down the risk.
Right. And what's lacking in your perspective each time LGMS observes a new data leak within the Malaysian ecosystem?
Specifically, when it comes to mobile banking, you know, banking application point of view example. So when there are incidents happen, and if we're able to nail down what are the root causes, when we come up with the series of action plans, that's where we can improve from it. Example,
sure.
Banking application, right? Let's say authentication. Did we have a very weak authentication whenever the user's trying to log in? Did I enable or did I implement multi-factor authentication,
sure.
or the trend now is we talk about biometric authentication. So that's when the moment of where your user trying to log in. What if after the login, being the user experience, do we have an effective fraud detection system? So if the bank have an effective fraud detection system, they were able to detect what is the user behavior, is it normal by these particular users, and trigger the necessary in order to process and interact with the users.
Mm-hmm.
And the post, what about the data is got compromised, got stolen?
Exactly. You do need to analyze that as well, right?
Definitely.
So moving on from there, Gilbert, let's discuss other threats, including unencrypted data, malware, unsecured third-party services, in particular public cloud, which does happen to be a big issue considering how people are not too careful about where exactly they access their online banking from.
I think this will back to how detailed or how comprehensive if the bank opts for a cloud solution or cloud platform. At the end of the day is who are the cloud provider that you work with and the onboarding process. So the onboarding process is that, yes, you can choose your preferred cloud provider, but who will be the one that help you to implement the cloud solution or cloud services? Not to mention that whether you be engaging an independent party to help you along the way to do a check and balance, and not to mention about any regulation governance to be adhered as well.
So all of this sounds to me actually like cost and the investment, of course, required for building cloud-native security models that assure data security. It is meanwhile significant. Yeah. So considering the fact that definitely there will be hesitation within the ecosystem, tell us about what are the risks of not investing in cloud-native platforms?
Well, I think there are two ways to look at it when we come about costing. We're back to old school day.
Sure.
You know, there is a lot to be more manual. The technology is a little bit behind. That will actually increase the manual cost, including people, including complicated processes to get one thing done, which that's not the market going to. Catching up the pace with how the users want to interact with the application to get things done may or may not, the old school way, we're not able to support that kind of pace anymore. So having an open mindset to explore what cloud can offer, what kind of security degrees or security assurance that cloud can offer, that will actually give you a long-term benefits, including cost as well.
Just out of curiosity, Gilbert, has there been an uptake for investments in these kind of cloud-native security models, especially compared to pre-pandemic, during the pandemic, and now, of course, in a different landscape?
Endemic,
so-called. Yeah. But at the same time, that also tracked with Malaysians' increase and extrapolated use of online financial services. So have platforms responded and seen, like, all right, we've got this many percentage more customers. Let's keep them safe. Let's invest a little bit of what we've made. Are you seeing that kind of a response?
There is a significant of a change of landscape on how user interacts, including corporate as well. You know, we used to be stay in the office. It's more effective to work in the office.
Sure.
But now working from home, people spending online, not to mention on all these, doing all these sensitive transactions on the application. So yes, the market is there, the trend is there. No matter what business that we are doing, it changed to go to online, which actually that triggers a lot of interest. The business go to online. When business go to online, security come the first, whereby is the information safe if I deal everything online?
Yes, or it should, right? Let's move on, Gilbert, into some of the more sophisticated and transformative cybersecurity functions. What role does quantitative risk analytics actually play in decision-making? And what would a Malaysian digital bank investing in this method actually learn?
Right. In my opinion, I have been observing a lot of, especially banks, that have invested a lot in this area of risk analytics, whereby they work very close with reliable risk analytic experts to come into a very detailed risk identification. By knowing the risk identification, that will actually drive to their cybersecurity roadmaps that is catered to the needs of the users. So yeah, I think the cost is there, the work is there. Of course, there's always room of improvement. We talk about IT, we talk about security. Things evolve every day.
Yeah. Exactly. And things can change within a minute as well.
Yes. Yeah.
And on another side of the spectrum, how can cybersecurity organizations lagging behind? What is your recommendation and advice for them to basically scale up and adapt to support such quantitative risk analytics, considering that, of course, there's a financial factor? Are there any other barriers to access, Gilbert?
Well, I think when coming in from cybersecurity practitioner like us, definitely first thing first is to know what you want to do, what you need to do by carrying out your role, right? Example, like if you are a network security specialist, what should you be doing and investing when it comes to network security? Same thing when go to what, like mobile banking application developer, what should you be practicing? So I think investing to the people, to the professional, when it comes to cybersecurity, no matter which IT area that you are in, investing in the people, upskill their skill set, knowledge, in the know-how, that is, make the cybersecurity like, is that just another day? It become a routine. Mm-hmm. That will be definitely a long-term investment on their part.
And would you say there are still players out there in the market who are not actually prioritizing cybersecurity, despite the fact that it is often highlighted through our data leaks?
I wouldn't rule out these possibilities. Yes, we have seen some companies or some individuals, you know, when there are incidents happens, operation come first, or even before they launch a business, security come later. Let's go for the business first. So it's very much a mixture at the moment. Probably the awareness, the maturity of cybersecurity is not there yet. probably in this part of the world. But Malaysia is catching up because of the trend of the needs of the market. So
consumer demand comes first,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. One last area I'd like to touch on, Gilbert. What are the essentials of a consortium sort of approach to form a digital bank with a successful proposition for, of course, customer loyalty and trust via definitely ensuring data protection?
Right. I think this is critically important when the management or the stakeholders coming in from different background, different expertise with different experience, they come in together and have a very clear vision and strategy. Mm-hmm. So with this, right, it will involve a very good cybersecurity roadmap or cybersecurity or information data protection governance. So
and when you're talking about a cybersecurity roadmap, Gilbert, does that mean each individual, perhaps digital bank, needs to have its own unique one? Or is it more of waiting for regulatory parameters from the general national authority?
Definitely, it would be best if you can have your own cybersecurity roadmap. Because this roadmap is not only a complement to what the regulatory one, but it is also aligned with the international markets, what is happening in another part of the world. In security, there's a lot of frameworks, there's a lot of trend that's happening. We used to talk about IT, now we talk about OT, we talk about testing the microphones, we testing the cameras. So all this has become a trend. So looking back to the business, what is important to you? Know where is your risk appetite when it comes to cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. Build your own cybersecurity roadmap without forgetting the local regulatory that you need to adhere to.
All right. Thank you so very much, Gilbert. That was a fantastic nutshell looking at data leaks as well as online financial security.
Thank you very much.
Right. It's time now to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere, though. We'll be right back here on Astrowani with me, Tamina Kausji, on Niaga Spotlight.